Don't let anybody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you're too arrogant. And if you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power.
Caribou, welcome all to Freedom Now, a global Pan-Africanist, internationalist, global affairs program where the survivors of the fittest are now the revival of the fittest, challenging continuously Western propaganda media lies read in order to propel liberation for all. This is Sister Femi. Stay tuned for a radical awakening through a revolutionary music mix flow. And as always, we stand ready for revolution. Freedom now, now freedom. Forward.
Abarigani, this is Sister Thage with Freedom Now's agenda for the week of July 11th, 2020. We commence with the African drumbeat historical calendar. Then, we have our weekly updates on what's happening in United Snakes' homeless capital, Skid Row, with our brother General Jeff. Then we're joined by Ms. Cherry Bell with Star Quality Beauty. She's a natural hair care provider with the natural hair care movement that has forced legislation in many states to change so that Africans can braid and care for hair without a cosmetology license that serves only a British and French curriculum that has absorbent fees, fines, and all of the economics she'll discuss that are involved in the United Snakes' attempt to usurp and profit off of African culture continuously. We will close out with Dr. Gerald Horn, prolific author, radical historian, and professor of African American studies at the University of Houston, who will give his political analysis for the week, discussing Egypt, Ethiopia, China, the FBI, cancel culture, and more. Our music clip mix includes MLK, Zap Mama, Mumiabu Jamal, Kwame Ture, Ethiopiques, Tupac Shakur, Bee Gees, and as Freedom Now continues to honor jazz musicians, this week we honor Sonny Rollins. So sit back, tell a friend, and as always, we stand ready for revolution.
Hotep, this is Sister Luyanda Koboka with our weekly Freedom Now African Drumbeat Historical Calendar for the week of July 11th. We present this calendar to give life to our ancestors, regardless of nationality, who have contributed to the plight of the oppressed by raising up in armed struggle, an ideological struggle against those racists, those capitalists, those exploiters who profit from the oppression of the masses of humanity. It is from these historical roots that we dare to struggle today and we dare to win. July 11, 1968. The American Indian Movement, AIM, was founded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, by Clyde and Vernon Balcourt and Dennis Bank. AIM was patented after traditional Native American resistance movements and the Black Panther Party. AIM provided an alternative to the frustrated youth in Native American reservations throughout the settler colony of the United States. AIM was and is a vibrant and militant response to the racism that has characterized traditional people's contact with the white man since their land was first stolen. July 11, 1905. W.E.B. Du Bois, Monroe Trotter, and others meet in Canada to organize the Niagara Movement, which was the precursor to the NAACP and the contemporary civil rights movement. July 12, 1815, Mariana Grajales was considered the mother of the Cuban Revolution. She mothered and trained 12 Cuban revolutionaries, the most famous being Antonio Maceo, the great general of Cuban independence. Mariana was forced to flee Cuba for her revolutionary work and joined with the Maroons of Jamaica. July 12, 1967. Africans beaten and brutalized by the police spear the Newark, New Jersey uprising. July 14, 1789. The masses stormed the Bastille prison in Paris, France, beginning the French Revolution, which was short-lived with the rise from the feudal ashes of the capitalist bourgeois and the spread of French imperialism. July 15, 1978. American Indians begin the 3,000-mile-long walk to symbolize their continued struggle since the white men came, to regain their traditional lands and culture, and to further consolidate the militant membership of various Native American movements. July 16, 1862. Ida Wells Burnett was born of slave parents and raises her 5 brothers and sisters when both her parents died of yellow fever. She challenges the Jim Crow laws of the United States by refusing to sit in the colored-only section of the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad cars and began one of many struggles against segregation. She led the anti-lynching crusades in 1892 after 3 of her friends were lynched by racist mobs. She was a prolific writer, organizer, and speaker on behalf of African people. July 16th, Queen Zephyrina, in the first half of the 19th century, cried out, "Death to the whites, long live the blacks," which was the war cry of the slave rebels. On December 24th, 1826, Zephyrina planned and led a slave uprising in Urubu, Brazil. 50 men and women using knives, machetes, sickles, and small bore shotguns rose against their Portuguese so-called masters, setting in motion a long series of rebellions throughout Brazil. July 17, 1898, Maria Libertad Gomez Quirada was born. She founded the Partido Popular Democrático Puerto Rico, an anti-U.S. colonial political movement. This has been Sister Luyanda for Freedom Now on 90.7 FM in Southern California and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And in the language of resistance of our African people, join us in our chant of freedom. Amandla, awetu! Amandla, awetu! Amandla, awetu!
of reform. For years, indeed, for decades, we have seen the mirage of reform being presented by neoliberal leaders and their media tools, only to awake too late to ghoulish nightmares of shattered promises and hopes betrayed. For reform is betrayal, a devil's bargain of better days to come that only brings worse days. Today, the nation shocked by the savagery of George Floyd's curbside execution for all the world to see. Just 5 years ago, politicians claiming themselves progressive sold illusions of police body cameras as some kind of solution. But George Floyd, not to mention Rayshard Brooks, put the nail in that coffin. For it meant nothing when it came to changing cop behavior. Today's reformers in Congress promise much, but they can and will deliver little but new illusions. Reforms are but reformulations of old promises, of old wine in new bottles, of things to come that never make it. For that is the nature of capitalist society. New items to sell that end up producing new problems. New days need new ways of thinking. They need creativity. They need deep change that truly transforms not discussions, but relationships. And who will dare say that this miserable present is awash in outright oppression? Not the lie of service, but truly repression, suppression, and oppression. New oppressive systems can only bring more of the same. To quote Dr. Huey P. Newton, founder of the Black Panther Party, we want freedom, not another reform. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Now, let us begin with the modern period of, I guess we could start with 1956 for our generation. This was the beginning of the rise of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King decided that in Montgomery, Alabama, black people had to pay the same prices on the buses as did white people, but we had to sit in the back. And we could only sit in the back if every available seat was taken by a white person. If a white person was standing, a black person could not sit. So Dr. King and his associates got together and said, "This is inhuman. We will boycott your bus system." Now understand what a boycott is. A boycott is a passive act. It is the most passive political act that anyone can commit, a boycott. Because what the boycott was doing was simply saying, we will not ride your buses. No sort of antagonism. He was not even verbally violent. He was peaceful. Dr. King's policy was that nonviolence would achieve the gains for black people in the United States. His major assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, your opponent will see your suffering and will be moved to change his heart. That's very good. He only made one fallacious assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. The United States has none.
Hey, this is General Jeff. Thanks for having me on Freedom Now with the weekly update from Skid Row. Obviously, COVID-19 is still a priority issue in our community. You know, we, the people of Skid Row, know that there's a federal lawsuit against both the city and the county. And so Skid Row community leaders, you know, because the focus of the lawsuit is about homelessness with a priority focus on Skid Row. And so there are those of us in Skid Row or Skid Row community leaders, including myself, we're just going to jump in. We're just going to jump and show up in the courtroom and put our demands down and add our voice to the conversation. So we expect to do that very, very soon. And it's going to be, now that the courtrooms are back open, it's going to be a serious showdown. We're so confident, we're letting it be known in advance. And, you know, because this is an outrage, how can you have some type of lawsuit and settlement talks that are going to affect each and every one of us and we don't have a voice in the matter? Yeah, no. We're not doing that. We're going to show up in numbers and we're going to demand that our voice be added to whatever settlement talks or whatever lawsuits, whatever is going on. And then also, too, you know, we want to indicate, folks, that $64 million is coming to the city of Los Angeles as far as what's called the CARES Act. And so that funding, along with that LAPD funding, along with City of LA funding, possibly $150 to $250 million. So we're looking at millions and millions of dollars are still coming to Skid Row and to Los Angeles, and we're trying to direct it more to, you know, housing. We don't want shelter beds. Shelters, folks are still homeless. You're just indoors. We want homes, whether it's permanent supportive housing, whether it's, you know, 3D printing homes, pallet homes, some type of, we want house keys, not handcuffs. And so, you know, it's very, very important that we add our voice to this conversation, because shelter beds, you know, rec centers, missions, all that transitional housing stuff, that's where the COVID is. We don't want that. And I'll close with this, that as chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee, I am leading the effort that where we are officially turned in a letter to the city of Los Angeles this week. We're in regards to the FBI arrest of our city council representative Jose Huizar from last week. And so currently right now, we do not have any city council representation. So we've got the regular, quote unquote, if you can call it regular, inhumane conditions on homelessness happening. Plus, we've got COVID-19, a global pandemic, and now we've got this federal investigation going on. And so there are a lot of issues that are happening that's directly affecting us in Skid Row. We don't even have any representation in City Hall. And so our city council, Los Angeles City Council, no other city council representatives have come to our community, have contacted us and said that how they're going to mitigate us. We have our new city council rep coming in November. But, you know, that's months away. What are we going to do in the meantime? And then you have Mayor Eric Garcetti, who's underperforming severely. And, you know, we have no information, new information from him in terms of who do we direct our inquiries with. And so, you know, we wrote an official letter. It's going to be circulating either at the end of this week or early next week. And so, you know, it's Skid Row. That's what we're doing. We're taking a proactive stance. So we're not going to wait till we have dead bodies all over the streets. We're taking a proactive stance. We're in the courtrooms. We're in City Hall. We're in the streets. We're in the PD headquarters. We're all doing what we got to do, no stone unturned, to fix these issues in Skid Row. If they won't do it, give us the money and get the hell out of the way. We'll do it ourselves. That's my time. I'm out.
America, Rogue Nation. Several days ago, the European Union announced that Americans were not welcome to visit any of the 28 member countries of the EU. Why? Because of the explosive expansion of the coronavirus among American states, which surpasses many foreign nations. At last count, over 3 million people in the U.S. are infected, resulting in at least some 130,000 deaths. Americans, long regarded as disputatious, quarrelsome, and argumentative, are now regarded as a threat to the public health of European states. It now joins Brazil, as a nation banned from European soil. Europeans must also regard Americans as foolish and undisciplined for failure to abide by simple health rules. Rules meant that the virus would surge throughout European society. In the U.S., meanwhile, southern and southwestern states regarded masking as an assault on American rights and an affront to freedom. What is most unnerving, however, is the elevation of politics over science, for the U.S. proves that he who substitutes a politician's decision over that of a doctor has a fool for a patient. For politicians serve their egos or their donors, and others suffer the consequences. The U.S. has emerged as a nation out of control, unwilling or unable to follow simple medical directions designed to mitigate a pandemic. Here, state governments seem ineffective. The national government seems simply incompetent. From imprisoned nations, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. This is KPFK.
To be an activist requires much, much more than making a sign and standing on a street corner or even joining a large existing march.
Rising Up with Sonali.
And a lot of the most effective organizing has a lot of strategy behind, a lot of thought put into how structures within the organizing can be built.
Rising Up with Sonali, weekday afternoons at 4.
This is KPFK.
I'd like to welcome to Freedom Now, Ms. Cherry Bell. She's with Star Quality Beauty and with the National Hair Care Movement, representing natural hair care providers across the United States, and who also had legislation changed in Iowa to support natural hair care providers. And so we're honored to welcome you here to Freedom Now.
Peace and blessings. Thanks for having me, Freedom Now.
Ms. Cherry, can you just give our listeners a brief description of what you do as a natural hair care provider?
I like to consider myself an image maker or natural hair care provider, where we are caring for the natural curls in our head, you know, those kinky, curly coils that, you know, help strengthen our brain power. So, you know, a lot of us are, you know, returning back to our natural state, and we need to know how to take care of our hair. And so I'm here to, I like to say, so you natural now what? You know, talk to Miss Cherry, you know, so that, you know, I can educate you on how to style and keep your hair hydrated and care for your scalp health and all these different types of things. And that all just, you know, so I like for to help people create the image they envision of themselves. So that's what I do. And I like to train other people on how to beautify themselves from an eco-friendly perspective. We like to say like the Het Heru part of the spirit where we're doing the beautification and the healing aspects and stuff like that. So that's what I do. And that's what I enjoy educating other people on how to do and right advocate on. For because it's a whole thing going on around our crown chakra. So I advocate for us to be free even from our hair. So those are some of the things I do.
Well, we salute you and want to ask if you can brief us on the absurdity and the audacity of the United Snakes' legal issues that they have on natural hair, and if you can talk to us about the natural hair care movement that you've been involved in.
Yeah, well, my initially started out of the state of Iowa, but I have worked with one of our sisters out in Minnesota where the law actually went through the court and they had said that we could be braiders as cosmetologists and braiders as barbers. And so we had not just legislation, but we had a whole court order from the state of Minnesota stating that the cosmetology board and the barbering board were infringing upon our right to be in the free enterprise. And things like that. And so they were monopolized, kick everybody out of trying to sustain their business and create their own business. And so that was kind of what happened. And I wanted to model the state of Iowa after that. But a lot of the Institute of Justice, and they're going around and they're deregulating, unregulating the braiders from the cosmetology licensing and with occupational licensing and not taking into consideration or understanding what the court order was saying. And so there is no reciprocity going on in all these different states. And they're saying we can shampoo in one state or use certain braiding, simple braiding devices in another state. And the cosmetology board and all them, they've adopted some of the legislation and wanted to be enforcers. So they, you know, we're trying to regulate ourselves and set the standards on what it is to have curly hair and how to maintenance our hair from natural perspectives. And then the powers that be that are not wanting to compete and then wanting to enforce and harass and fine us and make us look very bad and call us all these derogatory names, you know, just hijack the industry. And so that's what's happening on a legal level. And if you're not understanding regulations and deregulations and all these different types of things when we're talking about occupational licensing, you can get lost in the sauce. So just trying to navigate through that language and make sure that we have ourselves set apart so that we can run our industries and not be usurped. There are a lot of blow-dry bars, other people trying to, Europeans trying to culturally appropriate us taking care of our hair when they haven't done a well job. We've been sick from a lot of the chemical processing and they're trying to run away from being held accountable for that. And so we're working towards, you know, just putting us in a position to have our own table when we're working with the public, the federal guidelines and things like that. We're needing something and not, okay, this state is deregulated or this state needs 400 hours or this state wants 1,200 hours. You know, it's a lot of confusion going on what is going to work for us. It seems like to some states you can't shampoo hair. It's like, why y'all don't want us to clean our hair and then you want to make us look dirty and down and then give the other women, give them all the legislative powers and things written up for them to make them look good, clean, and, you know, but not us. You know, you don't want us to clean our hair.
So looking at the economics of the whole situation, you had mentioned the costs of how much time it takes. And so can you also talk about licensing fees, the fines that are issued, and what is actually happening?
So that's the thing when it comes to educational, that we're going through these curriculums that were based on European or British curriculum. And, you know, we're African people, so they're not creating institutions or allowing our institutions to be created so that we can educate ourselves and train ourselves to be able to take care of ourselves more properly versus letting the cosmetology board put all their things on us that have not been working for us. And yes, taking 1,200, depending on what states you have in, I know it was 2,100 hours for me in the state of Minnesota, and you're not being taught. There's a huge argument about the safety and sanitation and infection control, which we can also implement that in our own curriculums and stuff. We don't need to have to go through a British curriculum and pay them out and then still have to go outside and do our own training when we should be able to have our own institutions and setting our own standards of what that looks like and creating our own industry. You know, we are feeding so many other nations of people and being locked out of how do we care for ourselves properly. And so putting those requirements up and it's not actually helping is crazy. You know, it's actually just a waste of time, you know, where you, if you're not going to do curls or relaxers, what, you know, if we're not going to be using chemicals, why are we having to be forced to use those curriculums? You know, how do they monopolize everything and still take credit for stuff they're not even doing? You know, this is two separate industries. So there's a whole argument on, well, we need to be regulated too. Well, we weren't saying we wanted to be deregulated or unregulated or all these licensing things. We were just saying we want to work our business and be able to take care of ourselves. And so these are all these agendas that's behind it. So it's a bit confusing when it comes to that, you know, and just trying to understand and what this means with occupational licensing, because that even kind of leads to talking about defunding the police and everything because of the training and things that they have to do with how occupational licensing is giving them just a license to kill people because of the certain legislations and things that they're enforcing. And that's kind of the same thing that with the Board of Cosmetology and some of the Board of Barberings are doing when it comes to industry. You know, they're having a license to snuff out the competitors. And so I'm guessing that's what that has come to, but you're not taking into consideration what the state of Minnesota, when they had the actual case law put forth. You know, why? The question is, why aren't the states, while we're going around deregulating and unregulating, why aren't we considering that and making sure that we have our own braiding, braiders as cosmetologists, braiders as barbers? Like, why ain't people understanding that? I'm actually, like, looking for that judge. Like, Elizabeth, where you at? Like, you know, can you come say something to these people or explaining what's going on? Or even educate me a little bit better on, like, how all this stuff works, you know, how we're not getting reciprocity on a federal level and every state is doing different things and stuff. And you can shampoo here, you can't shampoo here, you can only use this simple hair braiding device here. Or the cosmetology people, they still get to enforce certain things upon you based on retaliation. So they use the law to systematically oppress us with all these different legislation, legislative acts, and the legislators, the writers, and the people that are passing these acts and stuff. We need to be on top of it, because then they create these systems that enforce these policies and procedures that put us, you know, out, like you can get up to a year in prison and a $10,000 fine if you're doing services that are not even related to cosmetology. Like, how? How do they have that power to do that? You know, when this is totally different, you know, outside of, yes, we're all working on the public, and I agree into sanitation and infection control. But if we don't have the institutions put in play for us to do those trainings, it's kind of like y'all lying. You know what I mean? Like, y'all saying we could do this, but there's no systems to support it. We got probably like the Institute of Ancestral Braiding in Texas. And then I know Essence China, she's doing some training. And I know Braids by Sabrina, she's, you know, different natural hair care providers. They're providing their services, but it's not on the level of, like, say, Aveda. And we want to be that way and have those systems to cultivate the up and coming natural hair care providers.
Okay, we just wanted to remind our listening audience that we are speaking with Ms. Cherry Bell, a natural hair care provider with the National Hair Care Movement. And so, Ms. Cherry, can you expand a little bit more on the curriculums that are available?
We have Essence China, she has a curriculum out in Arizona. Isis Brantley, she has her, she's the only state out of Texas that has something on a federal level, you know, where, like, students may not want to go to cosmetology, but then they are referring them to her school of Institute of Ancestral Braiding so that you can learn how to techniques to do locking and hydration and all these different types of things that is outside of the chemical process. So it is there, but it's not supported, you know, and it's not written in through legislation, and it's not, the public isn't able to be directed there to, or private, as much as they need to be, to know where to go to get these types of education, you know, because certain people don't want to compete. And so we're getting all these names and deregulated, unregulated, and all this stuff, you know, when it comes to occupational licensing. And so we got to figure what all this means, because this is what's going to be affecting us 100 years from now, 200 years from now. So we need to be making sure that what we have in play is going to support our kids and our family and ourselves, our beings, and not just be another way to be controlled by other people that aren't even black. You know, you telling me what to do with my hair and how to wear my hair and what products and stuff to use, and is not even for my best interest. And we need to make sure that we stay in the forefront of how we are being and who's setting the standard and the regulations and enforcement of those regulations. We need to be able to be in the forefront of that and not allow someone with the British curriculum to try to, or French curriculum to try to tell you, enforce how you be an African.
You know, I had seen a figure online that about 15 or so states remain where you have to have a cosmetology license to braid hair. So can you talk to us, is that figure true? And if so, where is the movement at with all of this?
Well, yeah, we're split down the middle on what it is to do, but we don't actually know what that means. Okay, some are deregulated, some are unregulated, and then there's no federal reciprocity when you want to move. Now say, okay, I'm in California now, and I want to go to Texas or something to do hair, or Missouri and stuff like that, or train people. You're not able to have the reciprocity to come there because everybody is doing different things, you know, and locking us out. And it just gets a bit confusing. Like, why do you want to make it so tough for us to be ourselves, you know, and be able to move around and educate ourselves on how to take care of ourselves from a holistic point of view, instead of pushing all, a lot of these chemicals and stuff on us.
Ms. Cherry, can you give contact information if people want to become involved in the movement and share their support and resources?
Well, yeah, I will give out my email. Right now it's starqualitybeauty@gmail.com, and just let me know how you want to be involved. If you are a provider, if you want to learn how to become a provider, or if you want to have certain hair services done, you want to be educated on how to take care of your natural hair coils, or if any institutions, you know, they have the Crown Act that is going around that, you know, need to be educated and trained on how to treat people with braids and coils and not discriminate against us. You know, send out these emails, because we definitely do need numbers and United and people to make help make my voice stronger, and a lot of other women that is making these changes in other states as well, so that we can all get on one accord, and that certain things aren't being slipped in under the rug. And so if we have more eyes watching and more people writing up legislation and talking about it and making those people that are writing these policies and holding them accountable to make sure that we have our space in this economy, you know, versus continuing to lock us out and to allow other people to do that. I need help with that, you know, and how to move forward with that. And so if you can, you know, email me at starqualitybeauty@gmail.com, that'll be great. Or, you know, you can follow me on my Instagram, that's starqualitybeauty, IG. I'm at @icherrystarqualitybeautybell on Facebook. And let's really just start making our presence known on social media and coming after these people to say, hey, yo, we're watching you, and we understand that this is our industry that you cannot just usurp and take from us. And we're wanting to, you know, have our fun. Like, because even in the state of Minnesota, they had us registering. And, like, so I go to Minneapolis and I do hair at times. So you had to register with the state of Minnesota, right? But then, so that was like a $20 registration. And then they took that away. and then they didn't even give us the funds back from that. The cosmetology board was keeping that, you know, collecting those funds for registration, and then they kept it and didn't even give that back to the natural hair care providers. So that's how they've been, like, doing that for abusing, basically, braiders and stuff over the years and keeping us out from competing in the market and stuff and holding us under. Because, I mean, even me as a braider, that's how I was an assistant for cosmetologists for years. And I just was definitely undervalued because I wasn't considered the professional. And so, like, right now we are working to put natural hair care providers back into the health field, because we're talking about, you know, the top of our head. You know, just like you get things done in your mouth, your crown chakra is very important, and you want people to be educated and trained well on what we're doing with our hair. So if people can stand with me on that and just understand, if we're having to keep going through legislation and stuff to say our hair isn't free after we've gone through all these different civil rights, and we got to go in and tweak it with the Crown Act and all, it's like, what else isn't free? So we need more eyes on what's going on to make sure that we are free on a whole level. So I think if you're able to just reach out to me and let's just form this strong union of natural hair people that care about being themselves and regulating themselves and setting the standards up for themselves and reaping the benefits of and the equity of the industry. Just stand with me, you know, reach out to me and speak up with me, you know, share those posts and follow what's going on in your state. And actually, you know, go to the bill tracks and see what they're writing up in there, and attend meetings and the lobbying and stuff, because they do a lot of sneaky stuff during the lobbying and all that type of things. When bills, like even for me, the governor had to go ahead and write out it wasn't even quite what I was asking for, because I was asking for what the state of Minnesota gave us through law. You know what I mean? But other people are trying to get the equity out of it and reap those benefits and just leave us as basically the face of it, but we don't reap the equity or the benefits. You get what I'm saying? So I need more eyes to help to watch people that's trying to steal the whole industry from us.
Well, thank you, Ms. Cherry. We've been speaking with Ms. Cherry Bell, natural hair care provider with the National Hair Care Movement, Star Quality Beauty. Please reach out and support.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys. I love you all. Peace.
That time of the Freedom Now Hour with prolific author, radical historian, professor of African American Studies at the University of Houston, Dr. Gerald Horn, with his political analysis for the week.
Listeners to Freedom Now know more than most that for millennia, the relationship between Egypt and Ethiopia has shaped the Pan-African world generally, particularly in the Nile River Valley. Today, that continues to be true, in that there is a conflict between these two African giants over the fact that Ethiopia has built a dam that Egypt says challenges its water and agriculture, insofar as it is claimed that Ethiopia is harming Egypt's claims to the Nile River. This couldn't come at a worse time, particularly for Ethiopia, which has had of late a conflict with the Oromo. Its neighbor, Somalia, is in turmoil and has been for decades now. South Sudan is unsettled. The Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Abiy Ahmed, won a Nobel Peace Prize for his attempt to settle the conflict with Eritrea. But quite frankly, that situation could spin out of control at any moment. In neighboring Djibouti, there is not only a U.S. base, but believe it or not, a Chinese base, a Japanese base, a French base, etc. Across the Red Sea in Yemen, you see that country continue to be bombarded by the Saudis. Egypt also has problems too numerous to recount. Listeners may recall that it was not so long ago that the Muslim Brotherhood was in power in Cairo. This is in the wake of the so-called Arab Spring and the fall of former leader for decades, Hosni Mubarak, and the ascension of the Brotherhood's Mohamed Morsi, who in turn was overthrown, and now Egypt is led by General al-Sisi. General al-Sisi is under pressure because the Egyptian sellout policy towards Israel is still in place, despite the fact that Israel supposedly is planning to annex more West Bank territory of the Palestinians. Not only that, but the situation in neighboring Libya is spinning out of control. Recall that it was in 2011 that the United States and its so-called NATO allies bombarded Libya, leading to the murder, the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi, the longtime, long-term Libyan leader. And since that time, Libya has been in chaos. As we speak, Egypt is threatening to invade neighboring Libya, believe it or not. At the same time, Turkey and its comrade in Qatar are bolstering the Tripoli-based regime, which is being challenged by a Benghazi faction led by a U.S. asset, who in turn is backed by France and Russia. In any case, this $4.8 billion Ethiopian dam on the Nile River is designed to aid Ethiopia's rapidly growing economy, one of the fastest growing economies not only in Africa, but on planet Earth. This dam is designed to provide more electricity to Ethiopia, with electricity being the lifeblood of a modern economy. So the fact is that this situation, this conflict between Egypt and Ethiopia, as noted, could not come at a worse time, because the continent itself could be pushed into a great leap backwards, even though without this conflict, the continent could be pushed into a great leap forward. Stay tuned. And that brings us to the recently published book by the former Trump National Security Advisor, John Bolton, a runaway bestseller entitled The Room Where It Happened. It recounts his star-crossed 2018-2019 stint as Mr. Trump's national security advisor, which eventuated in mutual recrimination between the 45th U.S. president, the oath in the Oval Office, and his former advisor, Mr. Bolton, who has now written this tell-all memoir. I guess the question you are eager to hear is, should you read it? My answer is, well, you should read it if you're interested in Cuba and Venezuelan solidarity. It's clear that Mr. Trump is determined to overthrow the Maduro regime in Caracas, and he is also, as you know, quite hostile to Havana as well. I should also say that Mr. Trump is to the right of Mr. Bolton with regard to Venezuela, but Mr. Bolton is to the right of Mr. Trump on the question of Iran. So I would also say if you're interested in Iran, you should also read this book because it's clear that the U.S. under Trump is still interested in weakening that regime. And I would also say you should read it if you're interested in questions like relations between the United States and China, the United States and the European Union and Japan. However, if you have an interest in Africa, there's not much here, despite the fact that the book is almost 600 pages long. Yes, there's a shout out to the European farmers in South Africa, who Mr. Trump says he would like to help and provide citizenship in case they're expelled. And also, our audience should take note of the fact that Mr. Trump is apparently hostile to AFRICOM, the so-called African Command, the Pentagon bases in Africa. However, other than that, I'm not sure if this book is worth the very stiff price. Now, I mentioned a moment ago the question of China. And that brings me to a very disturbing speech that was given by FBI Director Christopher Wray just this week, where he did everything but declare war against China. And that's no exaggeration. Right now, as we see, U.S. battleships are cruising in the South China Sea. Imagine what would happen if Chinese ships were cruising off the coast of Southern California. There are literally thousands of FBI investigations into Chinese activities in the United States, which are said to include espionage and cyber theft. There have been scores of arrests and indictments, not least of Chinese Americans, but not only Chinese Americans. For example, the head of the chemistry department at Harvard has been arrested and indicted, supposedly, for being too cozy with China. Mr. Bolton implies that China has bought off a good deal of the U.S. ruling class, and he names names. He points to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin in particular. I think it's important to take note of this because the United States and China will be competing for influence in Africa and the Caribbean for some time to come. And if African and Caribbean leaders play their cards right, they can benefit from this competition. Now, speaking of Africa once more, that brings me to the fact that the United States has issued its decision to withdraw from the World Health Organization, headed by an Ethiopian, by the way, known popularly as Dr. Tedros. I think that you should not be surprised by the fact that the United States, in the middle of a pandemic, has withdrawn from the organization internationally designed to confront the pandemic. It's the equivalent of throwing the pilot out of the airplane while the plane is taking off. But this is not a surprise because you may recall that the United States chose to withdraw from UNESCO, the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, when it was led by a Senegalese leader by the name of Amadou Mbo. You might recall that Washington had problems with the United Nations when it was led by an Egyptian, which was Boutros Ghali, and even when he was replaced by a Ghanaian, Kofi Annan, the problems continued. This is a reminder, in case you needed one, that the question should be posed, how can the United States treat Africa with respect and dignity, when the United States doesn't treat its own population of African descent with respect and dignity? And this should also remind us, if we need a reminding, that in light of this latter fact, that our organizations here in North America, post haste, should be sending delegations to the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to the Human Rights Council of the United Nations in Geneva, not to mention United Nations headquarters in New York, because this struggle is only getting more complicated and complex with every passing day.
Dr. Horn, can you talk about cancel culture?
Listeners to Freedom Now should pay careful and close attention to a letter in Harper's Magazine signed by leading artists and intellectuals, including the composer Wynton Marsalis and the linguist and activist Noam Chomsky. They complain about what is called cancel culture. What they're referring to is the fact that in light of the growth of the anti-racist movement since May 25th, when George Floyd was lynched on camera, this movement has tried to purge powerful organizations of white supremacists and of racists, or they put pressure on organizations so that these white supremacists and racists should be driven from their powerful positions. For example, the editor of the New York Times editorial page consented during the height of the demonstrations in June of 2020, in the wake of the Floyd lynching, he consented to have an op-ed piece published by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas that called for military intervention in the streets of the United States in order to squash these demonstrations. Many black journalists at the New York Times objected, and the editor could not take the pressure, so he resigned. Likewise, in the Philadelphia Inquirer newspaper, an editor ran a headline called "Buildings Matter." In other words, it's not just black lives that matter, but buildings matter as well. Pressure was put on him, and he too was forced to resign. So basically, what these people who are complaining about cancel culture are actually objecting to is the fact that in addition to gatekeepers from above who determine what's valid and what's not, you now have gatekeepers from below. That is to say, an anti-racist movement, which is also helping to shape the correlation of forces in terms of exercising a power. Take, for example, the fact that a signer of this letter was the prominent German journalist Nicholas Lemann, who wrote a scathing review of a book by the Harvard professor Walter Johnson on the history of St. Louis, which you may recall we reviewed on Freedom Now a few weeks ago, and we hailed this book. But it was to the left of liberalism, and so Lemann tried to cancel it by writing the scathing review. Or take another signer of this letter, David Brooks, a columnist for the New York Times, who wrote a scathing attack on Senator Bernie Sanders, which helped to stampede voters away from Mr. Sanders' socialism and helped to create the situation where Joe Biden, the tired centrist, is now the presumptive Democratic nominee for president. So what's happening is that there is a slow but steady power shift that's going on in this country in favor of anti-racism and against the status quo. And these prominent artists and intellectuals, rather than complain about lynchings on camera, or rather than complain about this recent spate of black men found hanging from trees, or rather complain about the police shooting rubber bullets into the eyes of peaceful protesters with protesters losing their eyes, or rather than complain about this recent spate of drivers driving their vehicles into peaceful protesters leading to deaths, for example, in Seattle just a few days ago, rather than raise these legitimate issues, which portend a slow and steady rise of fascism, instead, they're training their fire on the anti-racist movement, and certainly this is something to which we take stern objection. This is Gerald Horn for Freedom Now.
In closing, we'd like to thank our guests, Ms. Cherry Bell, our producer, Sister Femi, General Jeff, Dr. Gerald Horn, and our board op, Ricky. This has been Sister Thage with Freedom Now. Please stay tuned for our Sister Sumta coming up next with Spotlight Africa, addressing issues facing Mother Africa. And until next week, as always, we stand ready for revolution.
$10 might seem like a small amount, but when you sign up as a KPFK Sustainer Circle member, that $10 helps to pay for daily broadcasts of Democracy Now!, Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, and all of the news and information you hear on KPFK, including on my own show, Rising Up with Sonali. You get a lot for your monthly contribution, and we need that gift right now to keep bringing you all the programs you count on. $10 makes a big impact. We combine it with contributions from your fellow listeners who rely on KPFK as much as you do. Public radio only works with you. Contribute now. Go to kpfk.org/support, then click Sustainer Circle. Whatever you can do, please do.
...2020 summer will never be the same. Radio Aphrodisia will bring you our concert summer series featuring giants of African music. Manu Dibango, Hugh Masekela, Fela Kuti, Richard Bona, Franco TP, OK Jazz, Konono, number one. Join us Saturday afternoon. Be there, summer concert series 2020 with Namdi, Radio Aphrodisia, Showtime.